You're listening to Reading Writers, a podcast on the joy of reading widely.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and welcome to this week's episode of Reading Writers. With me again this week is my lovely wife, Emily.
Hello.
Emily's with me today because...
because you don't have a guest.
Well, you are my guest.
Aww.
Now, the reason that after a couple of episodes of having a couple of really good guests... Emily's joining me again, in part just because we had a little bit of a scheduling conflict with some people who we've been trying to get on the show for a while, but we've got some really great people who are coming on really soon. In the next few weeks, we've got Eric Geiger, who is the co-author of Designed to Lead. Also coming up, we've got Michael Kelly, who is the author of a couple of fantastic books, Wednesdays Were Pretty Normal and Boring, and... we have Andrew Peterson, a multi-talented individual. So he's got a lot of plates spinning, and he's graciously agreed to come on the show. Look for that in the next few weeks. But today, Emily, we are talking about something important.
What are we talking about, Aaron?
We're talking about the relationship between reading and parenting. And specifically what I mean by that is we're talking about how we train our kids with reading. Because parenting really is disciple-making. And so for us as parents, we want to train our kids. We want to teach them how to think and why we think certain ways. And so, and reading plays a huge role in that because we want them to be critical thinkers. We want them to be thoughtful people, and we want them to be people who can engage with the world around them.
Those are good things.
Those are good things. And reading plays a huge part in that.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Right. So what we thought we'd do today is really we thought we'd share just a few key principles. You'll hear some suggestions on books that you can read with your kids, not necessarily that you have to read, because one of the key things to remember always, always, always is that your conscience plays a key role in determining what is right for you to read. So,
give us an example, Aaron.
One example is, and this is one that I was going to bring up a little bit later, so I'm not going to say too much right now, but an example is the Harry Potter books.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Which strikes fear into the heart of about half of Christians and makes the other half go, oh, I love those books!
Yeah, there's, people have lots of different reactions too. Some people are really uncomfortable with the idea. Some people are just fine with it and don't really have a problem. And this is actually our first principle, is that if to read a particular book would cause you to sin, or in your mind, because of your convictions, would be a sin, then you can't read it, even if someone else can with a clear conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So, principle number one is don't violate your own conscience.
That's a good principle.
It is a good principle. It's an important principle. Principle number two is actually really quite simple. It's read the books first.
That's hard to do sometimes.
That is hard to do. And you know what? Sometimes you can't do it.
Sometimes you can't. I'll give you an example of times that I cannot or I have to trust... trust some of the pre-screening that I've already done. We subscribe to a service called Epic, and it's like having an entire library that you never have to return books to for $7 a month, and it's an absolutely fantastic service, and you program it to make the books age appropriate for your children. It is for children, so it's like the idea is anybody who's like 12 and under or 14 and under. But you program it to say, my child is 4 or my child is 5. And it won't show them books that are above their level because there's no point.
Right.
Right? So we have one set up for Hudson, one set up for Hannah, and one set up for Abigail. Abigail is getting to the age where there's like preteen fiction. And so she is a very trustworthy child. And she will come to me and say, Mom, can I read this?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll say... I need to look at it first, and sometimes I'll skim it and go, yes, this looks fine. So I'm not reading every single thing that she reads because that would be impossible. She plows through books.
She does. She reads really fast.
And I honestly do not have enough time to read as much as she does.
Now, there are some books that I pre-read.
That's true.
That's true.
And I'm really glad you do.
Yes. So, for example, I read a whole bunch of Andy Wilson's books originally actually in anticipation of maybe her wanting to read them at some point, but I actually just enjoyed them myself too as a bonus, so that was great. The reason I read those first was because I wanted to make sure that I knew what was there for when I could read them with Abigail, or that she could read them on her own. Going back to this again, this is where is a good place to talk a little bit more about the Harry Potter books.
Okay. Let's do that.
So we talked about those a little bit at the beginning of the show. I just finished reading the entire series. And when they came out, there were not a series of books that interested me at all.
Mm-hmm.
At all.
And you worked in a bookstore at the time.
I did.
You saw them flying off the shelves.
I did. I saw them going nuts. I saw people of all ages buying them. I was like, man, that book seems really long.
Yes.
But I read them, and so I understand some of the concerns that exist there because you know, it is a world where the kids are going off to a school to learn magic and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, they do play a lot with both so-called good and dark magic,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. But as I read the books, what I found was interesting was those are just kind of the window dressing to some bigger issues. And what I'm not going to say is that these are books that someone is doing like what C.S. Lewis did, where he sneaks the gospel in, in this really great underhanded kind of way. I actually don't know anything about the author's beliefs, whether she professes to be a Christian or not. She's certainly a talented writer. She certainly can tell a good story, and that's an important thing right there. So what I would do is, if there's the big if, I wouldn't force Abigail to read them. I wouldn't say you should read this. So I wouldn't overly encourage her to read them, mostly because they're fun stories. They're interesting. They're entertaining. They're fast reads. Which is impressive given the length of the books themselves. But personally, I don't know that they're particularly life-changing, but there's some interesting ideas that could be good for discussion, that kind of thing. But if she wanted to read them, I would let her,
mm-hmm.
as she is old, but only as she is old enough to.
Yeah, you were saying that the books age.
Like they do, yeah. The
younger books are meant for younger kids and so on.
Yeah, so with each book, it progresses a year in time. And so with each one, the characters and the issues that are there gradually become a little more mature and a little more mature and so on and so on and so on. And by the end, things are actually pretty dark.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some pretty powerful themes to talk about as a family, and again, not in kind of a heavy-handed kind of way, but things that we can relate to, like the power of love over pride and fear and these kind of negative qualities. So the third principle that I want to share is to really trust the foundation that you have been laying as a parent. Your kids have been watching you in your daily life. They've been watching how you relate your faith to all of your life and how it impacts what you read, how you work, how you think, how you talk, how you treat your spouse, how you treat them, all of these kind of things. And they've been ideally learning about Jesus from you in addition to the other people that God has put in their lives. And so God is undoubtedly doing something in their lives. I mean, we've certainly seen this with our kids. I mean, we honestly don't know if they truly believe or not,
mm-hmm.
at this point. I mean, our oldest, she's a wonderful kid.
We won't really find out for a while.
We don't know. Yeah, it's, you know, there's always that question. Is she just like, is it just her personality to be obedient and conscientious and all this kind of stuff? Is she just telling us what we want to hear or what she thinks we want to hear? Or
yeah.
But anyway, because our kids are so young, we don't know for sure where they're at. But what we've even seen already is when they run up against something that they know runs contrary to what mom and dad believe, they come and talk to us about it more often than not. Now, sometimes they're not like, I'm really concerned about this most of the time.
No, but they will be able to identify when something doesn't fit with what they've been taught. And we usually can have some pretty good discussions about that.
Right. All right. So we've given three kind of basic principles here. We've talked about obeying your conscience. We've talked about pre-reading. We've talked about trusting the work, trusting in the foundation that you've laid, which really also includes having conversations with your kids as well, right? I mean, one of the things that is really important in our home is we do have conversations about what we're reading, both in the books that we're reading. Like Abigail will rattle off the entire plot of this series of books she's reading, and
yeah, I don't always I don't always really want to hear everything about the dragons in her Wings of Fire books, but she's really excited to talk about them.
Right. And so we do want to encourage that. We want, even though we've had to explain, you know, these books just aren't our thing, we're glad that she's excited about it. And so we do our best to listen. But when she's getting into all of the intricacies, for me, it's a little bit like listening to someone talk about
a soap opera.
Yes.
Yes. So for those who don't know anything about the Wings of Fire series, it's medieval political intrigue, but with dragons.
Yes. Yes. That basically summarizes the entire thing. And we're glad our daughter enjoys them. She's having a good time reading them. Again, they're not our thing, but
no, but there are, they seem to be on a level, and well written enough that they are a sound replacement for the Rainbow Fairies.
Oh, sweet goodness!
We hate the Rainbow Fairies so much.
All right, and on that note, there's our final principle: don't let your kids read twaddle.
Oh yes, you have to tell them what twaddle
okay,
is.
Okay, so twaddle is basically an old timey word.
Yeah, it's a homeschool nerd moment here. Charlotte Mason was founder of an educational philosophy that I pick and choose pieces from, and one of the things that she says is don't let your kids read twaddle. What is twaddle? It's fluffy books that really are of no significance and don't do any, like, sometimes there are things that, like, are actually advertisements disguised as books.
Yes. So a great example of these is there's this series of books that you've probably seen at your local bookstore that all involve fairies in some way, shape, or form. And it's like rainbow fairies and icicle fairies and ice cream fairies and every single gumdrop fairies.
Every single book is exactly the same.
Yes. It's like, it's literally like they just have a basic template. They plug in a different flower or object
crystal,
or whatever.
Seashell.
Yeah. But then it follows the exact same plot because it's always Jack Frost who's
Jack
after
Frost
everyone.
Is at it
so,
again.
I know. I'm just waiting for Scooby Doo to show up and then it'll be more exciting. So we did have to put our foot down and say no to those books because they're terrible.
Or at least no more of those. There's like four of them. We should probably disappear those.
That would
some
be good.
Soon.
That would be good. All right, and on that note, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of Reading Writers. Emily, thank you for filling in for me today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Listeners, you'll find links to a few of the books that we think might be worthwhile sharing with your kids. You know, again, some will be written by people who are Christians. Some will be written by people we don't know if they are or not, but they're actually just really enjoyable. Some, again, use your conscience. But until next time, that's us.
That's us.
See you later.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Reading Writers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a review and a rating on iTunes. Your reviews help other people find the show. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronStrongarm. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/bloggingtheologically. And for more content, please visit bloggingtheologically.com. I'm Aaron Armstrong, and I'll be back next week with a new episode of Reading Writers.